We welcome your ears to episode number 170 of the Triple Option with RBKD on the horn, 1049, 1019, AM 1260, streaming live all the time, when and wherever you may be, on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. On today's show, are we supposed to be happy the Cowboys won? The Texans do America a favor, a COVID twist on dating, and would you do this to save your pet? Joined alongside by a lifetime Longhorn and card-carrying member of DBU, he's a mercenary mouthpiece, pop culture critic, and the one they call Blackstradamus. He's also the inventor of the Corona kit. He is Rod Babers. Rod B, how we doing today?
I'm doing great. I appreciate the intro, man. How was your weekend?
Weekend was good. How was your weekend?
It was good, man. No complaints. No complaints at all.
Love that. Also joined by a lifetime Longhorn and lifetime Austinite. He's so much of a man, they had to take one of his balls away to keep it fair for the rest of us. He knows where your IT guy's IT guy went to college. He is Kevin Dunn. KD, what's going on?
Doing great. Started this weekend off listening to you. Awesome job, by the way.
Thank you, sir.
And, you know, Westlake's pretty damn good.
Awesome job to your alma mater.
Yeah, right. No, they can play. And then it was good football all the way through. I mean, even yesterday, I couldn't have been more wrong. I did not win Beat the Pluck. It was a rough weekend for me. Roughest weekend I've had betting in about 3 years. You just got to own it, and you got to take it. So I'm going to do that today.
Real betting or Beat the Pluck betting?
Beat the Pluck, yeah. Okay. Now, I learned a long time ago that you got to be careful with the real betting. I didn't feel totally sure, but I had to bet on them, and boy, I bet wrong.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. I learned a long time ago, too. I'm careful with it. I make sure I got sure things when I head
exactly.
over to my bookie.
if it's one of those that you
it's
see
a sure
it
thing,
all, and
got,
I've been thinking
but
about it.
Sometimes
but
those sure things,
no,
they'll still come up to bite you, come back to bite you.
Yeah. I still had some dumb picks, though, man. You guys told me, Kevin, I picked OU to win, but I thought, you know,
and
close. I thought, you know, somehow they'd keep it close. I mean, the second that game kicked, too, I felt like texting y'all and being like, why didn't y'all slap me? Slap me next time. Slap me, all right?
Yeah, man. I agree with you. It was a tsunami of sooner to start that game. It was just, yeah.
I gave you a visual slap.
No, you
did. I thought
did.
That was enough.
You really did.
BK was,
BK
yeah,
shot
was pretty
me a
emphatic.
Look.
He was pretty emphatic.
He was. He shot me a look like, come on, man. You've been doing well on these things. You were surprised.
I was closer to you and Oklahoma State thinking, yeah, maybe Oklahoma State will keep it close for a while. Nah, BK said it'd be a Old Testament style butt whipping.
So is this going to be?
That it was.
It's going to be six in a row.
That it was.
For what? Oh, for Oklahoma?
Yeah.
It's looking that way.
Ask Blinken Riley, dude. he'll give you the breakdown on it. It's ugly.
It is. I'll be here as well. BK, Brad Kellner together. We are the Triple Option with RBKD. Rocking and rolling until 7 here on the Horn. Appreciate y'all spending some or all of your Monday afternoon with us. Hope everyone had a great weekend and a happy Thanksgiving week and a happy early Thanksgiving to all of you out there. Gentlemen, I figured we'd be coming in here today talking about a dominant win for Texas over Kansas. How the Longhorns took care of business against the lowly Jayhawks in Lawrence to move a step closer to the Big 12 title game. And I was hopeful that we'd be able to talk about this offense turning a corner and finding an identity and looking really, really good after the bye week. And I was hopeful that the defense would have another really solid performance, making it four really solid performances in a row. I was looking forward to recapping a stress-free game for Texas for the first time in seemingly forever. It would have been nice. I mean, that's what Kansas usually does for you. But of course, as happens very often in 2020 reality bites, we know the Texas-Kansas game did not happen. It won't happen until December 12th. And we also know, KD, that coming up next for the Longhorns is a date with the first-place team in the Big 12, the Iowa State Cyclones. I was hoping for a stress-free game on Saturday. That didn't happen. Now I know we'll be getting a stressful game this Friday with the Cyclones coming to town, especially considering how damn good they looked in Farmageddon against K-State this past weekend.
Yeah, anyone catching K-State in the latter half of the season, they're catching them at the right time. So let's throw that out there. We've talked about Will the Spill and how different they are. But you still think their defense would fight and match up. I mean, this was a team that beat Oklahoma with a defense that had third stringers on it. Remember the COVID issues they had going into that week? You just kind of felt like, all right, this is what this team's going to be. They're going to be a tough out. no matter who's quarterback. Now, if you get Skylar Thompson, then it can be a lot different. All that's gone right now. I mean, Kansas State just looks bad, and a lot of that was Iowa State coming together. You know, guys, one thing we forget about, too, when we talk about Brock Purdy, who was in the 60s on that PFF list, and Sam was 41, that, Rod, you know this as well as anyone as a player. Yeah, I've been playing really bad, but if I have it in me, it doesn't mean that the last 3 weeks I'm not going to play well.
That's how all Longhorn fans feel about Sam right now.
That's what you're hoping, like, with Sam?
I know it's in there somewhere. Hopefully
it's
the fourth
there.
Quarter, when it's winning time, you see the best version of him.
Right.
You
and we saw that from Brock Purdy. That was as complete a game as they've played. And they really mess around with you. They're a poor man's Notre Dame, and I've said that in terms of the – and Rod's talked about the four tight ends. They've got three of them out there a lot. And they're interchangeable. They keep them fresh. They will split them out. They will jumbo them and bring them in. They will look at your personnel and your defense and make a decision off that. They really force you to kind of play the hand. And when you can do that, if Purdy's playing well and the offensive line can just be average, the defense is pretty good too. This is going to be Texas' toughest test.
Yeah, against K-State, K-State wasn't really able to take anything away. I think Texas, and I know they'll focus on this, and we know it'll be the same blueprint they had against Oklahoma State. They'll focus on making Brock Purdy beat them. I mean, that's what you got to do. Brock Purdy this year, even in this game, you know, this was just the efficient version of Brock Purdy, right? He was 16 of 20, 236 yards. It wasn't spectacular.
Mm-mm. Yeah, he didn't turn the ball over.
Exactly. He was a game manager,
yep.
And he was what you say, mistake free. But he wasn't spectacular. He wasn't extraordinary. You force Brock Purdy to beat you, you can take away Breece Hall. They couldn't take away Breece Hall. Breece Hall, leading rusher in the country, 135 yards. He averaged 9 yards per carry. All right, so they were able to do essentially anything they wanted. Texas got to focus on taking one thing away, and the one thing you take away is Breece Hall. Can they do it? Nobody's been able to do it really all year long, but Texas rush defense right now is playing as well, at least it was. It's been 20-something days. It'll be 20-something days when they play in that gap. They were playing like one of the better rush defenses in the conference, maybe one of the better rush defense in the country. So that'll be the ultimate matchup. That's it. That's what the game comes down to. If Texas can contain, neutralize Breece Hall, force Brock Purdy to beat him, Texas can win this game because Brock Purdy can't beat him. And they don't have weapons on the outside. Tariq Milton, their best, most explosive wide receiver, is out. They rely on those tight ends. You're right. That's the guys they love. They played three of them, and they got four of them, and two of them are 6'7", and two of them are 6'6".
Right.
They are grown men. Hell, two of them, probably three of them, can play in the league.
Saner may be the best pro prospect.
You know what I'm saying? Chase Allen is a pretty damn good one, too. But, yeah, they know how to use him. They mix and match him to try to get matchups on the outside and in the interior of the passing game. And that's what they're about. They're about mismatches. And I always said the tight end position, to make a food analogy for KD, mm-hmm. It is the most versatile weapon on the football field if you know how to use it. It is the potato of football positions, right? It is the most diverse food. That's what they say about potatoes. Other foods are in there, beans, rice,
this
whatever.
This Thursday, how many different potatoes
you
can you
cook potatoes in a million different ways, and all of them very delicious. Right? Same thing with tight ends. You can mix and match them a million different ways. H-back, fullback. You can put them in inline tight end, flex tight end, put them out wide, all these different variations. And you know what? It's still damn good no matter how you cook it up. And that's what Iowa State does probably as well as anybody in the country right now with tight ends.
The worst potato in the world.
I don't know. It's hard to get
it. Man, there's not really a bad one.
It's hard to, yeah, it's hard
I
to
love
screw
so
up
many
a
different
potato.
Types, too.
They're so good. I was having au gratin earlier this week. Yeah, man, just randomly.
I've got a scallop potato dish I got from a
fantastic.
Restaurant in New York that is just...
It's amazing.
Unreal.
And then the baked potato. I mean, you
mashed
can always
potato,
just...
hash browns, French fries.
Oh, come on. Waffle fry.
Tater tots.
The fry itself is a whole genre of potato.
Yes.
You can get into all of that.
Who?
Gnocchi.
I don't even know what the hell that is.
Nokia,
but...
the old phone?
Gnocchi. Gnocchi.
What is that? Spell that.
G-N-O-C-C-I.
What is that?
Maybe an H in there. I think that's it, though. It's an Italian pasta, but it's a dumpling. It's a potato dumpling. And it's so light. You guys have probably had gnocchi somewhere.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, I knew you would appreciate that.
Potato.
Potato.
Too many unnecessary letters, though, in that word. I don't like that one very much. Yeah, I mean, Iowa State played incredibly well in all three phases on Saturday. That game was not close. And yes, Kansas State is not the same K-State team now that they were at the start of the season, right? I mean, just 3 weeks ago, this team was tied atop the Big 12 Conference, and they controlled their own destiny to get to Arlington, and they were maybe the story of this Big 12. They've fallen on some hard times, losing three games in a row. But Iowa State played really well, and I think Brock Purdy did more than manage the game on Saturday. I mean, his stats weren't spectacular. And yeah, Breece Hall is obviously the focal point of that offense, and I agree 100% that Texas needs to game plan around slowing down Breece Hall the best that they can. But man, Brock Purdy played really, really well. The throws he was making on Saturday were spectacular. His deep ball accuracy was the best that it's been all year. And he was also making plays with his feet, too. That's something we haven't seen from Brock Purdy a whole lot. And Texas actually did a good job last year in Ames. I know Texas lost that game, but they did a really good job containing the dual threat ability of Iowa State. Texas lost that game because of its offense last year at Jack Trice Stadium. Brock Purdy's legs were huge on Saturday. He was picking up yards with his legs. He was also throwing on the run better than he's done all year long. So if Texas sees that version of Brock Purdy on Friday, they're going to be in trouble. If they see the version of Brock Purdy that we've all seen for the other games that Iowa State has played this year, then I think Texas has a very good chance to win, because I do agree with you, Rod B. I think this matchup does favor Texas in a lot of ways.
I think it favors Texas, and especially because what does Texas do well right now? Well, if there's one thing that we had to get done in this game, it's stopping Breece Hall.
Yeah.
What does Texas do well? I mean, right now that's what they do, and they've got good personnel. And as we've talked about, it goes beyond the front four. It goes to the front six, and I'll throw in the safeties, who, when they bring down, do a pretty good job against the run. And really, the safeties have been pretty good, I think, all year long. So because you've got weakness at cornerback, well, with Milton out, I'm not as worried about
that. Obviously, you can't exploit it as easily. Their wide receivers
I'm sure there's a couple cats in there that they can run go routes.
Yeah, they're serviceable. Exactly. And they'll just test those corners because they should. I think it's just built into the game plan. They should test them every now and then. But because they like to weaponize their tight ends so much and they use them in such versatile ways, that matchup is usually going to be up against the Texas safeties. You'll have those guys matched up. Hopefully, they don't allow – I mean, Overshown can cover. Hopefully, they don't allow Juwan Mitchell to get matched up in coverage too much. I mean, that if you're Iowa State, you're trying to get Juwan Mitchell matched up in coverage against one of them tight ends.
Yeah.
Win all day. Ding, 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 ding. Go all day. Until Texas fixes. So I'm assuming Texas won't even allow that to happen. You can allow Overshown to match up on those tight ends. I actually do think he can match up pretty well because he's just really athletic. Of course, transitioning safety. And your safeties can cover. Right now, Caden Stearns is your one safety that's not covering really well.
Who would have guessed that?
And he's the most freakish athletic guy back there. So I like the Texas matchup of Texas DBs. Oh, sorry, their safety specifically versus those tight ends. I would actually be more weary and a little bit more anxious about those tight ends lined up against Texas corners. If they spit them out wide and start just kind of chunking the ball to them on the outside, that I would worry about a little bit, because down the field, 6'6 and 6'7 against guys who don't play the ball very well, that's not a really good matchup for Texas.
No, it's not.
You just loft it up and just play jump ball. And if Texas is out of position, they'll grab, they'll hold, they'll fall into the guy. There you go. That's P.I. So that's what I would do.
I'm worried about that, especially that, playing the ball. Saner, though, is the one we don't talk about a lot, and he's, what, 270? So, but he moves well, and obviously Kohler's talked about a bunch, but pro scouts are as into him. Chase Allen is more of a glorified receiver. I mean, he was a receiver coming in. He's put some weight on. But all three of those guys, like they really can just see where the personnel is and say, no, we're going to split it out, and we're going to spread it out, or – we're going to go jumbo. And that is scary because Texas is going to have to put personnel out there, and at that point, they're going to play off of that.
I think all three of those guys are captains, just to show how important they are to the Iowa State football team, right? Three guys at
all
one position
guys
who are captains. That is a bizarre thing to see, especially at the tight end spot where a lot of teams have one or zero on the field at all times. Guys, the Longhorns opened up as a 2-point favorite in this game. The early money is on Iowa State, though. I saw earlier today the line is down to 1.5. I wouldn't be surprised if it goes down even more as we inch closer and closer to kickoff, just because Iowa State looked so good on Saturday, right? And we haven't seen Texas play. As you mentioned, Rod, it's going to be 20 days in between games for the Longhorns. So 20 games from the West Virginia win to this game coming up on Friday. I will give some by-the-spread numbers that favor the Longhorns. And I got to credit Jeff Howe from Light the Tower and Horns 24/7 for compiling some of these bad boys. Tom Herman is 3-0 against the spread against Iowa State. Mm-hmm. Now, I know we're not too worried about the spread, but since Texas is favored, covering the spread would mean Texas wins the football game. Yep. Tom Herman overall is 2-1 against Iowa State, that one loss coming last year on the game-winning field goal, but Texas was a 7-point dog in that game. Meanwhile, Matt Campbell, as good as he's been, and he's been maybe the best coach in Iowa State history, definitely recent Iowa State football history, 0-4 against the spread versus Texas. So those betting trends would give an edge to the Longhorns. And how about this, guys? This is just straight up, no spread here. Iowa State in the Matt Campbell era, 1-5 away from home when playing as a ranked team.
Wow.
So it's weird. They get into the top 25.
This is under Matt Campbell?
Under Matt Campbell.
Wow.
They take care of business at home, but whether it's road games or neutral set games, they are 1-5 when they are ranked going on the road.
That's strange.
And I'm going to be talking about this a lot this week, guys. This is a familiar spot for Iowa State. They've actually been in a very similar circumstance in each of the last three seasons. Remember the game here in Austin 2 years ago, Texas and Iowa State late in the season, I think the second to last game of the season. That was a de facto Big 12 semifinal game.
Mm-hmm.
And if Iowa State wins, they've got a really good shot to get to Arlington, play for the conference title. That game wasn't even close. 24-10. It was 24-3 until the last 2 minutes of that football game. Like, Texas was dominant. I think the bigger story was Iowa State wasn't ready for the moment. Last year,
David Montgomery was also suspended for the first half of that game,
yeah,
too.
Good,
big
good
hit for him.
That helped.
Yeah, big
but
hit.
That was an
he,
offensive.
He played in the second half.
They were
half.
Terrible, though. They were terrible. Yeah.
Remember how bad their offensive game plan was?
It was horrible.
It was shocking. You kept on waiting for something.
It was nothing.
Yeah. I mean, last year, too, second half of the season, they're ranked. They're in contention for the Big 12. They lose back-to-back games to Oklahoma State and Oklahoma. They fall out of the mix. 2017, they start off conference play 4-1. Their only loss was to Texas. They actually beat Oklahoma that year, right? That was the first year Iowa State burst onto the scene. They had that huge upset. Well, they lost three of their last four Big 12 games to fall out of it. So we asked this question. I remember when we were doing our Horn Top 20 countdown, we asked the question of, okay, is this the year where Iowa State takes that step? Because the last 3 years under Matt Campbell, they've always been close but no cigar. And they've gotten to moments like this. They've gotten to games like this, and they've folded. As bad as Texas has been in the last decade, you know the Texas program has been here before. Iowa State has not been here before, and every time they get here, guys, they have folded to this point. So I don't know if you want to look at history or just completely throw that out the window, but this is Iowa State's moment, and more often than not, they have fallen short in these type of opportunities.
And I think it's why Matt Campbell as a Cinderella, the national flavor of the next coach, right? The next PJ Fleck, whatever. Mm-hmm. I think when you look at those neutral and road games, that's why he really hadn't. I mean, he's well respected, but he hadn't taken that level of, oh my God, this guy has to be hired anywhere.
Yeah.
It's more of a Midwest thing, and I think he's got a good job ahead of him, and he's done a really good job there. So it's all relative, but they haven't taken that really final step. And this weekend could be that for them, or this Friday.
Could be. He's just starting to get his guys, you know, the guys he's recruited. His kind of culture, specifically the tight ends. Like nobody in the country relies on tight ends like Iowa State does. So this is obviously something that he's envisioned of how to build this program. And you're right, this is a big game for him. This might be the biggest game in Iowa State history up until this point, truth be told, at least in recent history, because it's been a long, long time. What, 100 years since they've won a conference championship? So, yeah, I will see. And they're coming off one of their biggest wins ever. I mean, in terms of blowing out a team, they haven't shut out. The last shutout for them, I believe, was against Kansas a couple of years ago.
That doesn't count.
I know. But I think the last one before that was Texas.
Well, that doesn't count either.
Like, 2015 or something. They were saying they're playing some of their best football they played in a long time.
They are. Maybe it's a pandemic thing with them. 100 years ago?
Or was
1912.
It,
exactly? It was 1912.
No, 1912. Okay.
It was 1912.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I believe so.
No, that was a huge win for Iowa State. I mean, we knew K-State was reeling, but K-State had beaten Iowa State 12 of the previous 13 years, and that was an absolute beatdown on Saturday. So, I don't know. I mean, Iowa State, you're starting to hear Matt Campbell's name linked to bigger jobs, right? I mean, people are kind of pinpointing him as the replacement for Jim Harbaugh in Michigan. I've heard that a lot, so... Who knows how much longer he's longed for the job in Ames, but he's done a pretty phenomenal job to this point. I'm nervous about this one, guys. How you feeling early on?
Well, one thing to remember, Tom Manning is back. So when you look at some of their offensive game plans, that's changed a little bit. Remember, Manning was the OC in 16 and 17 and maybe even 18, then went to go be the Colts tight ends coach, then came back. So, yeah, so he's definitely familiar with what Campbell wants to do, but you kind of see a little bit of a different offensive game plan. If you think they're going to be as vanilla and really as poor as that game plan was a couple of years ago coming in, we were at that game, BK, and we were all just looking at each other like, what are they setting up? You know, you always think someone's setting something up when it's that vanilla, and then you get to the third quarter and you realize, they're not setting up anything. They just don't have anything here.
It ain't working right now.
I think the David Montgomery thing was big for them. I remember that game.
It was.
And I remember they had no identity once he was out. It was clear like they didn't know what to do with
the football. Butler dropped a couple footballs.
He dropped a couple of deep balls. They just were lost for some reason. And, you know, still at the time, Pumphrey Purdy was a really young player. But, yeah, it's a big game for them. I'll say that I think it's a really good matchup for Texas. I've said it before. Like I said about the safeties versus their tight ends. Our safeties are playing really, really well. The D-line's playing well. The rush defense is playing well. That's a good matchup. On the flip side of that, trying to see how the Texas offense is going to possibly move the ball versus that John Heacock defense and that Tampa 2, that's going to be, I think, a bit of a conundrum for Texas, because I don't know if Tom Herman and Yurcich are willing to open things up. We'll see. But I will say, after, you know, bye weeks and for bowl games, Tom Herman's really good. 4-1 after bye weeks and 3-0 in bowl games. Mm-hmm. And basically, this is, you know, 20 days is essentially a little bit less than a bowl game and a little bit more than a bye week. I'm assuming that advantage, whatever it is for Tom Herman teams at Texas, that you'll see that potentially come to fruition.
I'm kind of leaning there now, too.
This is as healthy as Texas has been in a long while. Tom Herman talked about it in his press conference. I mean, he said Keontae Ingram is questionable still with that ankle injury, but Josh Moore, Jared Wiley probable to play on Friday, and he said everybody else is expected to play for the Longhorns, so that's what happens when you get 20 days off in the regular season.
Right.
Doesn't happen hardly ever, but you got to take advantage when you do. Iowa State, they will have a very short week, of course, playing on Saturday, and then, of course, playing this Friday. Mm-hmm. Texas, meanwhile, should be very well rested.
Yeah, they should be. And about to hit the bubble, too. So Texas has been really good with COVID. You look around the country.
Very true.
And their own little mini bubble with students being gone Thanksgiving,
no doubt. All right, we'll take your thoughts. The Specs text line 337-3776.
Although I was hoping Herman would blast your Kansas program. Just make, you know, just say something like Dabo did about Florida State. Come on. We had a boring weekend as Texas fans. Give us something. I think Kansas was ducking us.
It's Kansas. It's not even worth it.
No, it's not.
Not even worth it.
I should just cancel the whole season up there, honestly. I'd be better off for them.
It's almost basketball season, Elsa. You know what?
A couple days from
nobody
now.
Nobody will be paying attention. It'll be basically the cancellation of football season in Kansas is the start of basketball season.
Well, they play number one Gonzaga as their first game coming up later this week. So
that's
nice.
Sexy.
Get ready for that one. All right, it's the triple option with RBKD.
During the show?
Thanksgiving Day.
Okay, good.
So
okay.
It will not be. You guys are in the clear. All right. Hey, by the way, later in the program, don't call now, but we will have a pair of tickets to give away to this Texas-Iowa State game. So be listening. Keep it locked in all afternoon long for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Horns and Iowa State Senior Day for Sam Ellinger and this senior class. Let's talk some Cowboys, though. The Cowboys won yesterday. Is that good? Is that not good?
Go boys!
We'll try to answer that question up next.
Darling, you got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go?
Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. I'm Rod Babers, hanging out with Brad Kellner and Kevin Dunn. You can reach us via Twitter. I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. Kevin Dunn at KevinDunn01 and BK allegedly at BK's Burner in the Twitterverse. Gentlemen, I don't know how, but the Texans and the Cowboys won on the same weekend. I don't know how the hell
All right.
it happened. Football gods have shined upon the state of Texas. I don't even remember the last time it happened. What was the last time they won
That's
the bowl?
Sad.
1972.
No,
it had to be last year sometime, though. It wasn't this year.
Yeah.
Definitely. They hadn't won this year, right? Same weekend?
I don't remember it.
Because they only beat the Jags. I don't know. You know, it's not worth the brain power to figure out. Right? My point is, we should be celebrating that they both won on the same weekend. I think.
But we're not. Look at him.
Well,
he's pissed off.
Not everybody celebrate. He's representing. He's got Cowboys gear on.
I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
He's got Cowboys
gear
on.
And what year does it say?
He's representing.
Oh, that's the Texas Stadium. Well, he's wearing a Texas Stadium anyway. He likes the organization. He doesn't like this team.
They're winning.
I like the old stadium, man. It was pretty cool.
They're winning.
Are you happy they're winning?
They won.
No.
I didn't know what to do yesterday. I mean, I can't root for them to lose, but I know they need to lose. I know the best thing for the Dallas Cowboys moving forward is them losing out and getting the highest draft pick possible. So, yeah, I kind of wanted them to finish the year 2-14 and end up picking in the top three and having their pick of the litter for who they wanted in next year's draft. And then they win, and now it's like, well, they can still make the playoffs.
They can win the division.
They can win the division. They can have a home playoff game, which they'd probably get stomped by anybody who makes the playoffs, the Rams, Arizona, whoever it may be.
That's true.
Hey, you guys are technically second, right, because of the tiebreaker?
Everybody's tied for second, except for the Eagles.
I know, but I think because of the tiebreaker, Dallas, okay.
I don't know exactly.
I heard that today.
You might be right.
No, it's a three-way tie for second.
Well, I know, but I'm saying like within that three-way tie, yeah.
Oh, I don't, that's interesting.
It's divisional standings.
I think we've been off on tiebreakers on this station.
Exactly. I don't want to do the math.
I heard that today. Yeah. No, but it's funny because it's such an S show of a division. And then you look at Philadelphia, and they're legitimately asking if Carson Wentz should be benched. Guys, he started 11-2. 11-2, that was when the MVP talk, he had the injury, but he was playing damn good football. He's 17-19-1 since then as a starter. Leads the league in sacks this year and also interceptions. The most amazing thing for him, for a guy who was labeled as injury prone, is he's been sacked that many times and he's actually still upright.
Yeah, he's terrible.
He's not that good.
He's one of the worst players in football right now.
Wow, there we go.
And the fact that the Eagles are ready to make the move to Jalen Hurts this early is not good. Now, they're not going to. Doug Peterson came out and said that would send the wrong message to the team if they benched Carson Wentz for Jalen Hurts. But the fact that now, we know Philly fans are crazy. We know there aren't a lot of sane ones, if there are any sane ones out there. But the fact that that's a reasonable conversation is a huge problem with the direction that the Eagles are going in. Wherever you got your information from was wrong, KD, because the Cowboys right now are dead last in terms of the tiebreaker because they have the worst divisional record in the NFC East right now.
So then that's some good news.
They only got three wins within a division? How many wins? Sorry, outside the division.
The whole division.
They only got like three wins outside the division as a division.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the Cowboys got one yesterday.
That's true. So, yeah.
So we're
right up
to four, baby.
Okay. Shout out.
This division is god awful. But I did not see yesterday happening, guys. I mean, the Cowboys played pretty well in all three phases. They were up 16-7 at half. You know, the second half started off with a Minnesota surge. Two long touchdown drives for the Vikings. They kind of took control. It felt like, okay, well, these are the 2020 Cowboys, and Minnesota's probably going to find a way to win. But Dallas, a couple of huge fourth-quarter touchdown drives. Obviously, the game winner from Dalton to Dalton. Little roadhouse action going on in Minnesota yesterday.
First time ever, last name to first name.
Yeah, how about that? That's kind of bizarre.
It's a random stat.
I know.
Very random. But it was huge for the Cowboys. They score with 137. They take the 31-28 lead. And how about the Cowboys' defense? They were far from perfect yesterday, guys, but they got to stop on that final Vikings possession. They also forced a couple of turnovers as well. And this defense just isn't that horrible anymore. I think that's the biggest storyline for the Cowboys. I mean, we were on here a few weeks ago talking about how this defense is on pace to be the worst defense in NFL history. Like, definitely the worst defense in Cowboys history, but like also on pace to give up more points than any defense in the history of this league. And they've played a lot better over the last couple of weeks, right? Gave up 24 to Pittsburgh. I know 28's not great, but I thought for sure the Vikings would go for 30-plus yesterday. They got a couple of takeaways. They got a couple of big stops when they needed to. This defense all of a sudden isn't that terrible. And because this NFC East is as bad as it is, all of a sudden you feel like, okay, maybe the Cowboys have a chance to win a couple of games, which might be enough to get them into the playoffs this year.
Literally a couple.
A couple. They could go 5-11 and they could find their way into the postseason. And oh, by the way, the Cowboys have the easiest remaining schedule of anybody in the NFC East.
Of course.
They only play one team with a winning record the rest of the way. That's Baltimore, who is not very good right now. Now, they'll kill the Cowboys. At least they should kill the Cowboys.
Yeah, they're struggling a little bit too.
But outside of that, the Cowboys only play one team with a winning record. Philadelphia and New York play four more teams with winning records. Washington has two more opponents with winning records. So the Cowboys have a chance, guys. And I was thinking after the game yesterday, I was so mad at myself. I couldn't believe I hadn't thought of this before yesterday. The Cowboys' fate is sealed. They're making the playoffs because they've got the king of the first-round playoff loss at their quarterback position.
Oh, Andy.
That's Andy Dalton.
Yeah.
Any Texans fan knows that. Andy Dalton is the king of somehow, some way finding his way into the postseason and then losing in the first round. The fate is sealed for Dallas. As long as that dude's playing, they're going to find their way into the postseason and get stuck with that 19th overall draft pick this year.
Well, I certainly won't make fun of fans, and you have to do this with your own fan base. If they're going to root for a win till the very end in every single game, and there's something noble about that, and there's something very, it's tribal, but in a good way, and, you know, almost patriotic, right? Mm. But I also won't get on people that say, you know what, if this team does get into the playoffs, they're going to get their cooked. And we know that. They're going to get killed and killed pretty quickly. And if you're really trying to think about the long-term macro, that's not going to necessarily be a good thing. Now, Rod, the NFL draft's so loaded that if you're picking 15th, you're going to get someone really good, yeah, right? But I understand the BKs of the world that look at it and think, man, I was really hoping we were going to get just one of those difference makers that we could pick at number 3 or 4.
Yeah, it's just that fans don't believe that you get almost any benefit from, you know, winning a division this year, which may be the worst division in the history of the NFL, and making the playoffs. But the truth is, you do. There are guys on this team that are learning how to win and mm-hmm. to lead and to compete. There are guys on this team right now that can help you win in the future that are learning it right now, real time, with those reps they're getting. And you actually can, if you're a real Cowboys fan, you're watching it and you're seeing the improvement.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing guys actually compete, whereas remember when Troy Aikman was questioning whether you guys had enough pride to compete?
Oh, man.
Right? Remember yeah. those days? So I understand. Trust me, I agree with you guys about the value of getting a high draft pick and those who are in that corner. But let's not act like there are no benefits to a team learning how to win.
That one's not brought up
learning
enough.
How to build leadership, right? Yeah. There are leaders now that are emerging on this team. And, yeah, of course, Dak is the guy at the natural leadership position. But there are other guys who are battling adversity, playing bad at the beginning of the season. Now they're playing well. Look what Alden Smith is doing. Look at Randy Gregory. Randy, I'll give you a stat about Randy Gregory. That's just mind blowing. Bobby Belt TX, you probably should follow him if you're a Cowboys fan. Played 3 games, right? And he only had 2 pass rush snaps in his first start. So basically 2 full games. And he's now 3rd on the team in quarterback hits with 5. Right? He had three in that game.
Yeah,
he's just, you know, you see guys that are just exponentially starting to develop and grow. And that's because these coaches, it's new to them, right? They're just starting to maybe get the message across to some of the guys. Maybe the light's just starting to come on with the new coaching staff. You're starting to see that in college football. Look at Oklahoma. I mean, it's pretty obvious Oklahoma, you know, battled adversity. They look like a totally different team than the one Texas played to 4 overtime. So, I mean, people don't want to see the story and kind of the narrative and the way a team develops and the way they grow. And sometimes they don't grow. Sometimes they get worse, unfortunately. That also happens. But I think the Cowboys are just getting better. I mean, they played the only undefeated team in the NFL down to the wire 2 weeks ago and then played a team who was on a 3-game winning streak and beat them this week. That team is learning how to win. They're a better football team right now. So I'm not going to doubt that they could win that really horrible division.
There's no question. They're improving. And for the defense, maybe it was as simple as getting rid of the disgruntled veterans, right? Everson Griffin, Dontari Poe. I mean, once they got rid of those two guys, they've started to figure some things out. And maybe you combine that with the extra weeks of practice, right? Learning Mike Nolan's system, learning what he's looking for. Maybe it's just slowly starting to come together for Dallas. Now, are they a good defense? No. Are they middle of the pack in the NFL? I don't even think they're there, but they're not god-awful anymore on that side of the football. And they got some good individual performances. Mm-hmm. You brought up Randy Gregory. I thought Leighton Vander Esch was spectacular yesterday.
That looked more like the old guy.
Yeah, the healthy.
Well, I'm sorry, the young guy.
The young guy of old.
You got me. You understand.
Rookie year, Leighton Vander Esch, who was just spectacular and looked like he was going to become one of the best linebackers in football.
Yep.
He was great. And what about the Aggie, Donovan Wilson?
Yeah.
2 turnovers.
Playing good football.
Himself. I mean, he's not great in pass coverage, but he is very good against the run, and he can lay the wood, man. The Cowboys have needed a takeaway guy for a long, long time. Donovan Wilson isn't perfect, but if he can become that, and that would be huge for this defense.
He's a better pro than I thought he would be. And, I mean, heck, even the run game. So I asked last week, when is Zeke going to get over 100? Will he get over 100? He got over 100. And then I'm talking to a couple Cowboy fans last night, and after the game, and they're like, I think Pollard, you know, he went 5 for 60. That there's some carries that Zeke had in there that if Pollard had, he may have gone over 100. I mean, that's how they have a nice little 1-2 punch there. And Andy Dalton is the answer for them if they want to win games. Yeah. I know Garrett Gilbert was really close in that one, and that was an undefeated team. But we kind of forget Dalton was a starter for a reason.
You got to give Mike McCarthy some credit for what he did with the offensive line, moving Zach Martin to right tackle.
Yes.
I mean, that's
yes.
something that Jason Garrett never did, right? Even when the Cowboys had injury issues with Tyron Smith and Travis Frederick. Yeah, Zach Martin was always lined up at right guard. And it took a couple of weeks, but the Cowboys shifted some things around. They got Terrence Steele out of the lineup. They got Brandon Knight out. Like, they moved Zach Martin, and they actually had reputable offensive line play yesterday, which allowed Andy Dalton to make some plays, and it allowed the rushing attack to be productive.
That's how dominant and good your offensive line was 4 years ago. That Zach Martin is that it can be that at least average or yeah. it hold the fort as a right tackle, and he was your center.
It's amazing.
They're going to the Super Bowl, man.
Oh, here we go.
Cowboys are going to the Super Bowl.
E.
Hogan,
no,
get your walking shoes
not.
On, baby.
E. Hogan, you're fine.
You're going to be walking to Tampa for the game and then walking to Dallas for the parade, baby.
They could win the division, though. No doubt, man. Yeah.
That'd be 2020. There's never going to be a 2020. It'd be the Cowboys getting the Super Bowl.
We'll kind of know the Cowboys' fate within the next 10 days, right? They've got two Thursday games coming up. They play Washington, and then they play the Joe Burrow-less Cincinnati Bengals. So if they are like a playoff team, they win both of those games relatively easily and are probably sitting in first place in the NFC East.
Wow.
If they don't, then, yeah, you got to have the top five draft pick conversation again.
That would be crazy.
Yeah.
It's so 2020, though, like you said.
Yeah, it is.
It just matches up with the season and the year.
I heard it earlier. Who's Cincinnati's backup?
Finley.
Finley, Ryan Finley.
Michael.
NC State. No.
Former
Ryan
Dallas Cummins. Maverick. Unreal. All right, so the Cowboys get a win. That's pretty bizarre. This whole NFC East is pretty crazy. Another crazy aspect of 2020 is the fact that the New England Patriots are probably not going to make the playoffs. We can thank the Houston Texans for that. The Texans get a win over the Pats. We'll tell you how they got it done and what it means for them up next.
Welcome back. Triple Option here with RBKD. It's Kevin Dunn. It's Rod Babers. It is Brad Kellner. We're taking you all the way up until 7 o'clock. Hope y'all are about to get some time off for the week. Everyone deserves that in 2020. We're going to have a lot. I'm excited about this week, guys, with the weeks off with Texas football. It'll be fun to see some family and do all that, but I'm really excited about game day. It's going to be early, 11. You guys are going to get started with pregame at 7 o'clock. Of course, that'll be on Friday, the day after. But we got Texas-Iowa State in the top 20 matchup here.
It's exciting.
It is.
Well, because we've talked about the macro and what this game means for Tom Herman. We don't get into that. We don't have enough time, and we have talked about it. but we just talked about what it meant for Iowa State, too, right? If for Iowa State, there's some believe it's the biggest game they've had in over 100 years, and their games will continue to be that big this year. If they beat Texas, then the Big 12 title game for them will probably be the next big game. They play West Virginia after that?
Yes.
Okay, so along that path, it'll continue to be bigger and bigger games for them because there's more at stake, and more at stake for Iowa State than, I don't know, it's been a really, really long time, as BK brought up too, when they've been in this position. And for Texas, yeah, Tom Herman, margin for error is minuscule. He can't afford to lose another game. If he does, he knows what the fans and the boosters and the donors are going to start talking about.
Yeah, he does.
It's his future.
It's his future. The other thing, too, and I saw BK making a face, so I always want to find out what that face is about.
Oh, you said, and hang out with your family and do all of that. I was like, it's a little
because I normally would say eat and you know, obviously enjoy each other's company. Some people are doing that virtually this year. It's different for everyone.
Got
so I'm not trying to.
Okay.
It's going to be weird.
I just take things very literally at times. So
yeah, I know.
You're talking about doing your family.
No,
to each his own, I guess.
Unless it's virtually. If it's virtually, then I'm not going to judge here.
Yeah. Don't.
Hey, you mentioned Matt Campbell and the rumors. One thing with Iowa State to add to the importance of it for their fan base is they're not idiots. They know that you're probably only going to have Matt Campbell for a select few years, and then there's a good chance. I mean, they hire well, but they've had some bad hires too. and that, you know, it could be a couple years before they get back to this point, because they've really elevated to a spot with Campbell in the Big 12.
If that AD is smart, and I think he is, I think he's a pretty sharp guy, they've already got their short list of guys that they're going to call on, because they know this day is coming. Matt Campbell is that good.
Right. Yeah. I wonder if they'd hire Haycock.
Interesting.
I'm sure they'll interview him.
Mm-hmm.
Campbell's probably going to try to bring him wherever he goes.
Right. That too.
If he goes to Michigan, he's got to keep Don Brown.
No. He's trying to win. All right, guys. Texans yesterday, they knock off New England at home, 27-20. The final score. I'm going to give myself a little pat on.
Yeah, I am too.
Yeah, you did
well
say
done.
You saw the Texans winning this game.
Yeah, I just saw Deshaun Watson having a really, really good day, and he did. 28-37, 344, three total touchdowns. And the Texans rush defense, I did not see this coming, right? I figured New England was still going to be able to run the football pretty much at will against what has been the worst rush defense in the NFL all year long. But the Texans did a good job holding New England to just 86 rushing yards on only 24 carries. And that was kind of the blueprint, right? New England under Cam Newton, not a team that likes to play from behind. They want to play from the lead so they can establish the run. They can run it on every first and second down and keep your offense on the field. The Texans were able to get out up in front early. I know they were down 7-0, but then they were up 21-7 at one point. And New England had to play catch-up. And Cam Newton, this version of Cam Newton, is not quite built to be that successful. He did play pretty well yesterday, but in a quarterback duel, you take Deshaun Watson over Cam Newton any day of the week. So Houston finds a way to get a win. Their first win over not Jacksonville this year, and they played pretty solid yesterday, Rod B.
Yeah. Best first half, arguably, that Deshaun Watson's ever had. Had a record for completions and a record for yards in the first half. 241 passing yards and 18 completions, both career highs for him in the first half. Basically, they had 274, I think, total yards they had in the first half. He was responsible for 271 of them. So, it was Deshaun Watson getting off to a fast start. And once Deshaun Watson is hot, very few quarterbacks in the NFL that can keep up with him. And I would say that other than the rush defense, which is a surprise as well, I think the bigger surprise was the offensive line for the Texans. They didn't have Laremy Tunsil in this game, gentlemen. They did not have their starting left tackle in this game, not have another one of their rotational starters in Senio Kelemente. They had Roderick Johnson at left tackle. They put Max Sharping out there at that left guard spot and kept it moving. Actually, did more than kept it moving. Had their best game as an offensive line, arguably all year long. It's crazy. Watson was only pressured on 2 of his 37 dropbacks, lowest pressure rate in a game of his career.
That's crazy against Belichick.
And without your starting left tackle.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know how that worked out. Their pass block win rate, which is, I think, the stat if you can basically win your one-on-one matchup and block someone for more than 2.5 seconds, it was at 82%. They just played really well. That offensive line did really well. Pass blocking. They're still really bad at run blocking, and that's what they got to work on. Their running game right now consists of Deshaun Watson as a runner and basically the short, high-percentage passing game. If you take Deshaun Watson's rushes out of the equation, their running game only was able to produce 13 rushes for 19 yards on non-Watson running plays. They got to fix that. That's bad. But the offensive line, I'll give them a lot of credit, man. That's a really great pass-blocking display by them. Shows that they're getting better as an overall unit when you're going to be missing two starters and still play that well.
I don't want to take anything away from the offensive line performance by Houston by any stretch, but that's one of the things I liked about this matchup. The Patriots came into the game with only 13 sacks this year. Like, they have had a problem getting pressure on the opposing quarterback. So if there was a team that Houston could maybe have a solid offensive line performance against, it kind of felt like this New England team. Now, still, the Texans' O-line has struggled against bad D-lines over the last couple of years, so it was, without a doubt, a pleasant surprise seeing Deshaun Watson's jersey pretty clean when that game came to an end yesterday.
Yeah, but for me, it really was about the Texans' defense, because I expected New England to be able to run the football, and they couldn't. I mean, J.J. Watt batted down 4 passes. It seemed to be their all-around best defensive game that I've seen.
And Cam Newton did throw for 365
yards. Yeah. I know he did. But,
I mean, he was 26 of 40.
But all in all, considering how bad that run defense was, the fact that you could just force them to do that and still be able to win that thing, I was impressed. My expectations were low, but I was impressed.
And how about the Texans maybe delivering the dagger into the Patriots' playoff hopes, right? New England now 4-6. That AFC is loaded. They're third place in the AFC East. So Houston, maybe doing America a solid yesterday, guys. I mean, even if you're not a Texans fan, I assume most people are Patriots haters. And I think we're all a little bit tired of New England making the postseason and competing for Super Bowls every year. I was kind of looking forward to New England maybe struggling a little bit. And that might have been the dagger once again yesterday. So nice win for the Texans. Houston 3-7 on the year. Third place in the AFC South. They play on Thursday against Detroit. So we get some Texans and some Cowboys action at the Thanksgiving table this weekend, and winnable games for both teams.
Yeah, they got, what, six games left, so they got Detroit. That's winnable. They've got the Colts twice. They've got the Bears, Bengals, and Titans. So Bengals.
Two wins in there.
Yeah, exactly. I see two wins, maybe three.
All right. We'll take your thoughts. 337-3776 is the Specs text line. It's the triple option with RBKD. Let's get back to some college football. The Longhorns did not play on Saturday, but their opponents did. And also, well, their opponent coming up this week, I should say, did. Also, we'll talk Bedlam, and we'll go around the country. Some of the big headlines from college football. That's coming up next.